KKW Studios and part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Books and Whatnot. I'm Beth Golay, host of KMUW's Marginalia Podcast.
And I'm Suzanne Perez, KMUW's resident book reviewer. This podcast was recorded on August 27th, 2024. Any references to new or forthcoming and the like are relative. Hey, Beth.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. September 1st is when our listeners will be hearing this episode.
I like September.
September is one of my favorite months, October being my very favorite.
Any month that ends in burr, you know there's a possibility of burr.
Yes.
Right?
Oh my gosh. Sweatshirts and bonfires and pumpkin spice things. I'm so ready. But it's also a really interesting reading season. I think that a lot of books get introduced in the fall. And, well, tell us about who we'll be talking to later in this episode.
Oh, I'm so excited. We will be visiting with an independent bookseller, Holland Saltzman. She is the owner of The Novel Neighbor in the Webster Groves neighborhood of St. Louis, Missouri. And we're going to talk to her about September releases that she's excited about. And she's going to sneak in a couple of October ones because she's really, really excited about those.
Just like
and
us.
She's just a delight.
I cannot wait to talk with her. I mean, this is such an exciting book season, and I am really, really liking this new segment of our podcast where we talk to booksellers about the titles they're excited that are coming up because, you know, they get, like Beth and I do, sometimes they get early looks at some of these books. So
right.
They can, you know, you can count on them to point you toward the good stuff.
You can always count on an independent bookseller. That's why we like the Indie Next list so much. Because
they
pre-read those books, they send in the recommendations, and yeah, that's a good resource for you as a reader.
Absolutely. And we count on them every month now. And I just love it. Can't wait to talk to Holland. But let's get started with some of our current reads.
Why don't you go first?
Oh, okay. I'm starting out with a doozy. It could possibly be, Beth, my favorite book of the year.
Yeah.
Do I say that every month?
You kind of do.
I'm nothing if not enthusiastic. But you know what? That's okay. I've had a lot of good books this year. I think I did say that in January about
sure.
Northwoods.
You've said it a lot.
Well, anyway, this
my stack is high.
no kidding. Well, this, okay, I'll get right to it. It's All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker. This book came out in June, I believe, and it is such a slow burn kind of mystery novel. Let me tell you about it. So the premise is it begins with a 13-year-old boy who goes by Patch. He was born with one eye, so he literally wears an eye patch, and he envisions himself as a pirate. Hmm. This is a 13-year-old kid. He is just endearing. He befriends a girl of the same age who goes by Saint. And it's a little bit about their friendship. It's a lot about their friendship in the end. But the book begins, there is something going on in their community where girls are disappearing. So there's obviously something nefarious mm-hmm. afoot. And Patch is in the woods one day when he comes across a girl he knows of the same age. Her name is Misty, and she's being abducted. She's in the process of being abducted by this strange man. He runs in, saves the girl. She runs away. Patch gets abducted.
Oh, no.
So I'm not going to give anything away what happens after that, but suffice it to say that the predator kidnaps him instead. Patch then wakes up in total darkness where he's being held by this captor. And what happens over the next several months changes the course of his life and everyone around him. I know that premise kind of sounds like, you know, your average sort of mystery thriller, but this book was so much more. I mean, the language, the writing style was so unique. I did not read Chris Whitaker's first book or his previous novel, We Begin at the End. I want to now because I love this one so much. He has a very distinct writing style that's almost poetic. And very, very short chapters. So the pace of this book just really moved along swiftly, and it just kept you going. And there were so many twists and turns. It ends up being quite an epic story because it spans a lot of the lifetime of these characters. But it's about the effects of major trauma, what it does to you, what it does to those around you. It's a story of loyalty and love between these childhood friends. It's about so much. I can't even begin to tell you how much I adored this book. I said in my review, which is at kmuw.org, that if you go into this book and you don't really dig the writing style, since I've read this book, I've heard of people reading it and saying, ugh, it's just not for me. That is totally understandable. You know, not every book is for everybody. But I ended up hugging this book when I was done with it. Yeah, I just really loved it. So that's All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker.
Okay, my first one is On James Baldwin by Colm Tobin. And
that's how you say it, right? I always wondered how you say his name.
Which one, the first or the last?
Colm. Okay.
I was saying it wrong, and then he told me.
Really?
Yes.
Fletcher Powell would be happy to hear that.
So Tobin stumbled upon Baldwin when he was 18 years old. He had been gifted a book token to use at a bookstore, and he could only use it like on a book. And he had the opportunity to read something that wasn't required because he was, you know, transitioning to university. He had been interested in the civil rights movement in the United States, and so he bought a copy of Go Tell It on the Mountain. Mm. And he's been writing about Baldwin for 25 years. And On James Baldwin, which is the title of this, is a collection of those essays. We spoke on what would have been Baldwin's 100th birthday, August 2nd, 2024. And Tobin writes about how Baldwin's essays and articles were written for deadlines, like created to reflect their own moment. Yet they have this strange, urgent life to them when you read them more than a half century later. And he spoke with me about how Baldwin's work affected him as a writer and as a person. Tobin, you know, he's an amazing writer and author in his own right. You might recognize him from Brooklyn and the follow-up Long Island and many others, dozens of books. It was so enjoyable to speak with him about his influences. And so that's On James Baldwin by Colm Tobin.
That's awesome. And I need to read, I really want to read Brooklyn and, you know, obviously the follow-up Long Island, which
I haven't
came
read
out this
them
summer.
Either.
Yeah, and our TBRs just grow every dang day. Okay, well, my next book is a little bit of bookish serendipity for you, and it's called Glaciers by Alexis M. Smith. I came across this little gem of a novel in my local bookstore, and you know how it is when you're shopping and it's like something just catches your eye.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is. I have it in my hand right here. It's just so precious. It's a Tin House book.
Love Tin House.
Yes, I know the Tin House Publishing Company, and it's just a tiny little paperback with this gorgeous scene on the front that's kind of faded with a woman's hand touching some snowy mountains. Anyway, I just loved it. I saw that it was only 110 pages. I picked it up and I thought, I'm just going to read it. I've never heard of it. I know nothing about it. It actually came out in 2012 and then was reissued.
Oh, okay.
Geniusly, as it turns out, because it worked with this in 2023, this little paperback. What it turns out to be is just this tiny little moment of time in this woman's life. And you know how we love these books,
mm-hmm,
Beth. Things like, it reminded me of Mothering Sunday or On Chesil Beach, these kind of brief moment novels. So this is a story of Isabel. She's a 20-something woman who loves thrift stores, and she collects little things that are left behind by others. She likes to go into a thrift store and find those old photos, mm-hmm, that, you know, have been left, and wonders about the people in them and takes them home and frames them and surrounds herself with them. She loves shopping for vintage dresses. She just loves old things. She lives in the Pacific Northwest, but she's from Alaska, so she has all of these nostalgic thoughts of her Alaskan upbringing. This is just a really brief story of her getting her computer fixed by this man who works with her, and then she comes to find out he is a soldier, and they get to know each other very superficially, but she dreams about kind of taking it further with him and taking him to this party that she's going to. And I'm not going to give anything away, but it's just this incredibly sweet, touching moment that's sort of the relationship between the two of them and what's going on in her mind and his, and what life sort of throws at them. So it is a gorgeous, gorgeous little story. It's called Glaciers, a novel. That's what it says on the cover. It's called Glaciers, and it's by Alexis M. Smith. I'm glad I picked it up.
I am too. Yeah. I'm going to have to pick it up.
Yeah. Well, you can read this one. Well, it's annotated, though, because I like to highlight.
You know, I don't accept books because they just become part of my collection.
That's true. That's true. That's all right. Did you ever find that copy of, what were you looking for?
I was looking for...
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Never found it.
So
wow.
If you have my copy of Killers of the Flower Moon, it is personalized to me by the author, David Gran, and he wrote a lot of lovely things in there to me, so...
It'll be easy to spot. Yes. It's very personalized. It's probably in some little free library somewhere.
Oh, probably.
But yeah, we should have that little public service announcement in every episode. If you spot Beth Golay's copy,
I've told you
copy.
That I go to my friends' homes, and if I'll see it on the shelf, I'll pick it up and see if it's
see
to
if
me.
See it's yours. Okay, well, I'll expect that when you come over.
I had somebody return a book to me that she found at a garage sale that was signed to me.
Oh,
I had loaned
gosh.
It to somebody, and they put it in their garage sale.
Oh, wah, wah. That's, you know, that's a good reminder to the audience. Before you put books into a garage sale or take them to a resale shop, you know, check and make sure they're not someone else's. That's just do us all a favor.
A friend of mine returned a book to me last week, and I went to shelve it, and I looked at the post-it note, because when you go to signings, they put the post-it note in there, and it said, just sign. So I sent a note to my friend and said, I don't think this is mine. I would have never had John Burnham Schwartz just sign a book to me.
You would have had your name on it,
I think this is yours.
That's awesome. Just sign. Who's that? All right, what's your next book?
Okay, my next one is Our Narrow Hiding Places by Christopher Jansma. And I fell in love with Jansma's work when he published The Unchangeable Spots of Leopards in 2013. And Our Narrow Hiding Places is a novel, yet it's personal to him. It's about a family living in The Hague during the Dutch Hunger Winter when the Nazis occupied the Netherlands. And he was inspired by his own grandmother. And he learned her story during the pandemic when he would check in on her often because he was the one who lived closest to her. And there's even a bit of this reflected in the book as well, because there's a grandson checking on his grandmother after the fall. But he says, even though that's in there, the grandson is not him. But one of the fascinating bits about this book, and it reminds me a little bit of your All the Colors in the Dark, mm-hmm. is that it has to do with generational trauma. And the effects of that. And, you know, what we learned in this book is that trauma can literally change one's DNA. Mm. So if your grandmother survived the Dutch Hunger Winter, studies have shown that there's a genetic component that shows that you probably carry that with you now. Whatever changed in her body is now in your DNA. And so this book, it's beautifully written. It's a bit harrowing at times, but it's important. Especially given that, you know, what we see on the news these days, this just allows you to, even though these are fictional characters, you're put into these moments of starvation and war and whatnot. And it's just a little bit more personal than what journalists can show us.
Yeah.
So that is Our Narrow Hiding Places by Christopher Jansma.
And your description of that makes me think, you know, he either wrote or researched this during the pandemic or was inspired in some way by what happened during the pandemic. And we are starting to see a lot of those works of art come out now. And it's so interesting to me. And we knew it at the time, didn't we? I think
we did.
You and I were like, there's a lot of creativity happening in these quiet moments when everyone is hunkered down. And I wonder what it's going to be like in a few years. And now we're starting to see that. It's so exciting.
Because authors have to be careful of like when they set their books now, because anything that's set between the years 2020 and, you know, late 2022 or 2023, you can't ignore the fact that there was a pandemic going on.
Right. It's so fascinating. In the same way that we're getting a lot of detective novels and mystery novels that are always set before DNA, you know, science was popular, or things set before the iPhone, before smartphones.
Before cell phones, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
Because it's like there's so much tracking now, it totally changes the way your plot will
that's
work.
Right.
So, but the pandemic is absolutely like that. So that's interesting. And you sold me on Jansma's Unchangeable Spots of Leopards. I remember. I think you might have hand sold that book to me.
I was at Watermark Books at the time.
Yeah,
and
I think you did.
I had read three chapters, and I ended up reaching out to dozens and dozens of people saying, I know we have similar reading tastes, and I've just started this book, but it already has me hooked. I'm going to order one for you. And
hard
if you
sell.
Don't like it, just return it. And if I continue reading beyond chapter three and I don't like it, I'll cancel the order. I think I sold 47 books.
Oh my gosh, that's genius.
Yeah.
I would do the same thing with All the Colors of the Dark.
There you go.
Oh, and so many books, it turns out, this year. I'll order
this
all these
my
books
favorite.
For everyone.
This is my favorite.
No, this one. This is all I need. It's the only
yeah,
one.
So
all
that right. is Our Narrow Hiding Places by Christopher Jansma.
Okay, well, my next one is dystopian, near future, things I love. This is Helen Phillips' new novel, Hum. And this opens with a character. The main character's name is May, and the first chapter is she's sitting in this very futuristic operating room where she's having her face altered just slightly enough, and it's being done by an AI robot. They're called Hums. She's having an operation on her face just enough to evade facial recognition software. And she's kind of a guinea pig in this project, this experimental procedure, because she needs the money. And why does she need the money?
Why?
She needs the money because she lost her job to an AI robot. Her job, ironically enough, was training AI robots to be more like humans, and she did it too well.
Wow.
Isn't that everyone's nightmare?
Yeah, it really like, is.
So an AI replaced her in her job. There, she and her family are really hard up for money. Her husband is kind of a gig worker. It's an interesting kind of job he has too, where it's almost like an Uber handyman sort of thing, where he answers calls to do all sorts of things that robots can't for whatever reason, or like shop for people, or you know, do these random things. But he's not making much money. They have two kids. They need the money. Being a part of this experiment is going to get them money. And what she does with part of her money is she splurges and buys her family a weekend in this botanical garden, which is in the middle of this really gray, horrible, dystopian city. And in the garden, there are still lots of animals and waterfalls and forests and all these things that do not exist anymore in most of the real world. So it's like this little paradise. So they proceed to kind of go off the grid and into this garden. And as I often say when I'm giving descriptions of books, things don't go quite as planned, let's just say. So this novel, I reviewed Helen Phillips' previous novel, The Need, which was also looked at kind of the stresses of motherhood and you know, approaches to parenting and things like that. This one also incorporates this AI angle that is so fascinating and a little too realistic. It was just so terrifyingly creepy because you feel like it could actually happen on Earth. The other thing that I loved about the description of these robots is, on the one hand, they're helping you with your daily tasks or whatever, and then they'll switch real quick into a commercial that you don't even realize they're doing. It's like, oh, it looks like your skin's getting dry. Would you like some, XYZ product? Can I buy that for you? Would you like to, it's like you're spending your entire daily life saying no thank you to these products they're pushing. It was just so easy to believe that this could happen one day, and it was really well written, suspenseful, tense, all of the things. A really interesting ending. I wasn't completely fulfilled by it, but I thought it was a good one and unexpected. So that was Hum by Helen Phillips.
You might have heard a little bit of clicking noise
when
Suzanne was talking. I got onto ChatGPT and said, simulate a conversation between KMUW's Suzanne Perez and KMUW's Beth Golay about books they're reading this month.
Oh my gosh, what does it say?
So Suzanne Perez says, hey Beth, it's great to catch up. I'm curious, what's on your reading list this month? And Beth Golay says,
oh my. What does AI Beth Golay say?
Hey Suzanne, always a pleasure to chat about books. Can't stop laughing.
Always a pleasure.
Well, I just started reading The Heaven and Earth Grocery Store by James McBride. It's set in the 1930s and delves into issues of race, class, and community. His writing has this incredible ability to weave humor into serious themes. What about you?
Have you even read that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You tell me this. This is AI Suzanne. Oh, that sounds fantastic. I've heard such good things about McBride's work. As for me, I've been diving into The Fraud by Zadie Smith. It's a historical novel, which is a bit of a departure for her. The story is based on real events. Is it the Tichborne trial?
I don't know. I didn't read it.
And it explores identity and truth in such a nuanced way. Zadie Smith's prose is always a treat. And then Beth Golay says, Zadie Smith never disappoints, does she? I love how she can tackle so many different genres and still maintain her voice. Speaking of genre bending.
There's like segues and everything.
I'm going to copy this post it on our website.
Yes. Okay, that is
sorry,
so freaking scary because, A, I have not read The Fraud.
I know.
And that sounds better than any description of any book I've ever brought to the show. My God, we are going to be replaced by robots.
She hasn't read The Fraud, but it is her favorite.
It may be my favorite book this year. I'm not sure yet because it's not next week yet. But,
oh, I'm sorry about all the laughter.
No,
I just couldn't stop it.
I wondered what you were up to over there. I was like, why is she typing? I'm talking over here. But now it's totally understandable. What? Oh, my gosh.
Sorry, you're going to have to take that snip
no.
out.
I'm taking any of this out. This is crazy. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you were talking, and I thought,
Did they know? Okay, well, how did ChatGPT know that you had read Heaven and Earth Grocery Store? And why didn't they
I don't think they had.
So that was just a coincidence.
Yes.
But then
because
you would
talking
think
about,
that they could go online and see
what
I had reviewed.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
Because did you read Miracle Creek by Angie Kim?
No, but I own it.
Because here, Suzanne Perez AI says, I loved Miracle Creek by Angie Kim. So I've been meaning to pick up Happiness Falls.
Oh,
I've been in the mood for something a bit lighter, too. So I'm alternating with The Book of Goose, which you've already
which I
read. Yeah. And then I said, sounds like a perfect mix.
Oh, my God. This is like so much better than the real us's.
Oh, but at the very end, though.
Yeah, but it's a little contrived, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Beth.
Well, you said it's fascinating to see how these stories from different times resonate with our current world. Books have this incredible power to connect us across time and space. And I say, so true. It's why we keep reading and discovering new stories. I can't wait to discuss these further once we've both finished them. And you said, definitely, let's plan on that. Until then, happy reading, Beth.
Oh my
and I
God.
Say, happy reading, Suzanne.
Okay, well, next month's script is just going to be AI created.
It's going to sound so bad. I'm not going to be able to read it without
laughing.
It doesn't
have all the snorts and sniffs, though, or the sips of water to stop from, oh, my gosh.
I don't know how I can go to talk about a serious book after this, but I'm going to try.
I think it's your last one.
No.
Okay, so we will definitely put that in the show notes for everyone. To enjoy at your leisure.
And I will make sure to alter it to make sure we put AI behind
it. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. AI Suzanne, AI Beth. Wow.
Creepy. Okay. You let us know who wore it better. The AI folks, did you like their conversation better?
No, don't tell us.
Oh, they're not going to like it.
Okay, of course not. They like the real us. Wow. Okay, so what is your next book, Beth?
It's called Black Butterflies by Priscilla Morris. This is another look at war, but this time it's the siege of Sarajevo in 1992. Zora is an artist and teacher when changes come about in Sarajevo. And this place was known for years for its acceptance of one another and for its ability to coexist. But then conflict arose between the Serbs, the Muslims, and the Croats. And most residents didn't see it coming. Zora asked her husband to take her mother to England where they could live with her daughter, and her plan was to ride it out and stay behind. But nobody really expected the danger, the stopping of utilities, the bombings, everything that happens during a siege. And she was stuck there with her little community in her block tower apartment, part of which had been blown off with bombs. And it was just an amazing and heart-wrenching and horrific story. And, you know, once again, she was inspired by family. This time it was her great uncle. And just like in Jansma's book, you know, we get to see starvation in Gaza and horrible images in Ukraine on the news. But there's something palpable about how you can internalize what you read and, in a way, live these things through your characters. I will say that Black Butterflies was shortlisted for the Women's Prize for Fiction.
Oh.
And I will also note that the title Black Butterflies, it refers to the pieces of burning book pages that floated down after the National Library was set ablaze.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so.
What an image.
I know. That is Black Butterflies by Priscilla Morris.
Wow, that one sounds great. You've read some difficult stuff
I have.
This month. Well, now to something completely different. My next book, let me tell ya, it is All Fours by Miranda July. Oh, my goodness. I picked this up because everyone was talking about it, and I was a little scared because everyone was saying how it was just off the wall, kooky, weird, sexual, sort of. Anyway, Miranda July, for those who don't know, she's an independent filmmaker. She's a kind of a multimedia artist. This novel of hers, she also wrote a novel a while back called The First Bad Man, which now that I think about it, I remember a friend telling me she had read that and just kind of it's a weird book when someone says, yeah, I read this, and then their eyes just get wide and they don't know what to say. That's kind of what All Fours is about, too. So the premise being this woman and her husband kind of have a dispute between the two of them. He says there are two types of people in the world. There's drivers and parkers. And drivers are people like him, and they're content with life, while parkers, you would think that would be different, but anyway, while parkers, like he thinks she is, are kind of bored with it, and they're always looking for the next best thing.
Yeah, so you would think that would be opposite.
I know, but it's not, and I'm sure that this is right, because I rechecked the book. Anyway, so to prove him wrong, she sets off on this cross-country road trip. She needs to be in New York for a business meeting, and rather than fly, she thinks, I'm going to drive. I'm going to show him I'm a driver. But then for reasons she doesn't understand, very, very early on in the trip, day one of this trip, she pulls off about 30 minutes outside of her hometown and checks into a hotel where she proceeds to put down temporary roots and do lots of weird things. I can't tell you what they all are because it's just so bizarre, Beth. She has sort of a relationship with a younger man. I'm not going to give anything away because the best part of the novel is one of her first decisions about what she does to this hotel room. It's almost this like roadside motel, and she, you know, wants to settle herself in this room. So she makes these changes to it. And that's honestly one of the best things about the novel. I will say this novel was incredibly well written. It is very obviously a sort of middle-aged middle-aged self-discovery novel. And this woman, you know, is in the midst of this identity crisis. She is perimenopausal, so she is dealing with all of the changes in her body and her mind and struggling with who she really is versus who she was. And there's all of this talk about women's value at different ages and things like that. There is so much good in this novel, so much. And yet, it was so cringy in parts that you end up just only remembering those parts.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like it's just like there's the writing and the story itself was fantastic. You make what you will of her decisions and what she actually does, but I will tell you, it kept me reading. About halfway through, I just thought, okay, this really isn't for me. But I finished it out of absolute morbid curiosity.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, where is this thing going? And it kept going.
Just feels like a bad dream.
Yes, it was very fever dreamish. Yes, that's a good description. It was like, and then, you know, a hippopotamus walked into the room. But, you know, the sexual version of that.
Yeah. Interesting.
I can't. Yeah, I, take my word for it. Do not pick this novel up if you're easily offended or grossed out. But at the same time, it was all just very realistic, real life stuff that she is just unabashedly describing and getting into. And I have to respect her for that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this was All Fours by Miranda July. Lots of talk about this novel, and now I see why.
What did you think it was going to be about when you saw the title All Fours?
Well, I didn't really know because the cover is really odd. It's like a golden landscape, almost like a sunset sort of landscape, but then and then it just says All Fours. And actually, to tell you, to explain the title a little bit, very, very late in the novel, a friend of hers talks about they can't knock you down if you're on all fours. You assumed it was about something probably different.
Yeah.
No, we're speaking in code about this novel, and that's okay. That's okay, because it's so much about women's strength, and it speaks to strength and vulnerability, I guess. Anyway, fascinating. I can see, you know, certainly the appeal. It does make me wonder about her films, which I spoke with Hugo Fan, our local film guy here at KMUW, about her. He was like, he saw my review online and went, You read Miranda July? Have you ever seen her movies? And I was like, no, I had no idea. He was like, oh. I was like, that explains everything. So,
that's funny.
Anyway, yeah, it was All Fours by Miranda July.
Okay. I probably should speak in code about this next book, but I can't. So we will have a content warning coming up. It's mm-hmm. called That Librarian, The Fight Against Book Banning in America by Amanda Jones. Okay, so this book is about the censorship movement happening in schools and public libraries these days. Amanda Jones is a school librarian, but she attended a board meeting in July of 2022 for the Livingston Parish Library, which is public. In Louisiana, they say parish, and we say county.
Right.
So she went because she saw on the agenda an item listed as book content and signage. And she didn't know if they were going to question specific books or not, so she spoke out against censorship in general. And she had just been named the National Librarian of the Year by School Library Journal, so she knew what she was talking about. But then 4 days later, she discovered that she was the subject of a targeted attack campaign on social media. And this is the content warning to our listeners. Mm-hmm. They claimed that she was exposing children to pornography and teaching six-year-olds about anal sex.
Mm-hmm.
And they were posting horrible images
illustrating
these things. And the bandwagon was open to jump on, and many in the community did. And so this book was personal. It was about the attack, the effect that it had on Jones, the defamation lawsuit. She did explain the policies for book collection used at the library, and also that policies the library has in place works, that books challenged for reconsideration, you know, some have been moved to more appropriate sections, but not a single book has been banned in the 2 years since that meeting. Now, I know you read this as mm-hmm. well. What did mm-hmm. you think?
I thought it was an incredibly important and timely memoir. It's kind of a micro memoir, I guess you would say. It's not like, you know, when we talk about memoirs, usually people think they're about someone's whole life story. Mm-hmm. This is about basically a year or two in this woman's life, but a very, very dramatic year. I think it's an important book. I really appreciated Amanda Jones getting into detail about what that vilification on social media looked like. I mean, there are actual screenshots mm-hmm. in the book that show you the posts on Facebook and elsewhere and what that did to her emotionally, personally. She had to take a medical leave mm-hmm. from her job. She was completely stressed out. She was thinking, I'm on the right side of history here. I'm going to stand up against people wanting to ban books and infuriated like many of us are when the people wanting to ban those books have not read them.
Correct.
And do not know the content of the books. They're just hearing one thing or another from, you know, one political leader or another. And it has become this huge culture war in across the country. And I have to commend her for sharing her story. It did, I think, you know, lean toward the personal, almost to the detriment of the book, because it's so personal. Her lawsuit, for instance, had nothing to do with banning books. Her lawsuit, she filed suit, by the way,
right,
against the people defaming her on social media and basically it's a defamation suit. So it was kind of a different sort of free speech court case that she was fighting, although it was obviously related to the book banning itself. But she gets so into the weeds at times and repetitive about, you know, how stressful that was. No, I mean, obviously no shade to her, but it just was so personal that it did not, I didn't think, you know, really put that experience in the context, in the larger context of everything that's happening. And that would have taken, you know, it would have taken a lot more time, a lot more research. And I can understand the desire to get this book out to the public on a fast track, which it did seem that way. So, you know, pros and cons, I'd say, because I think it's an important book. I didn't think it was the best that it could have been or probably will be on this topic. It was a microcosm of what's happening. And I think in that way, it's very important and impactful.
What I found amazing, like you were mentioning, just the regurgitation of, I'm putting facts in quote, because they're regurgitation of lies from people who have not even opened these books. They haven't cracked the spine of any one of these books, yet they're saying what's in them.
Right.
But I also found it amazing just how easy reason is smothered when something becomes political.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, people whose kids she had taught in school and knew better immediately turned against her. And I found that a little bit heartbreaking.
It was very heartbreaking at times. She really does talk about thinking her friends were going to show support, and she did get a lot of support from all over the country, and she, you know, she even reprints like some of the letters and emails that she had gotten that really lifted her up, and you know, when she was feeling particularly down through this experience. She also, by the way, includes the full text of what she said at that first meeting that spawned everything.
Yeah.
It's at the very end of the book, interestingly. But anyway, but it's in there, and I appreciated that. But you're right. I mean, it is. There's so many myths and so much information about how libraries work, about the job of librarians. You know, she's sitting there saying, we are trained to shelve books in the appropriate sections. And she also makes a fantastic argument, I think, for what some might call sexually explicit material, others might call sex education for teens, because this is information that a lot of kids need because they might not get it anywhere else.
Well, I also found it interesting that some of these young people couldn't check books out of the library, yet they were allowed to get married at the age of 16 in Louisiana.
That's right. She makes that great point. Or, you know, and the point I've heard from so many librarians is like, wait a second, you're telling me, you know, this book on a shelf that happens to be in the teen or even in the adult section of our library is a threat to your kids when they have a cell phone?
Right, exactly.
You know, they have the world at their fingertips and can access things you cannot imagine. Novels like All Fours, for instance.
That's right.
You know. I thought it was interesting, too, where she was like giving examples of, you're not going to see the graphic novel Genderqueer shelved beside A Very Hungry Caterpillar.
That's right.
It just doesn't happen. You know. And similarly, I thought it was fascinating. She said the Sarah J. Maas Court of Thorns and Roses series was very, very thoughtfully shelved in their library. She read them, and the first one is shelved in the teen young adult section, and the rest are in the adult section. They're a little bit racier. It's a little bit more adult material. But it's there if someone wants to access it. And she really makes the fantastic point that the only people who should be monitoring what children read is their parents, and
right,
that's if they choose to. So not someone else's parents. And it's just a fabulous read, yeah.
Did you ever read the letter that John Green wrote to the board of the Hamilton East Public Library? And it was after they had instituted some reshelving policy.
Yes, and this was within the last few years.
This was, August of 2023, so just about a year ago. I'll include a link to this on our show notes as well, because the whole letter is just fantastic. But he
and John Green, being the author of many young adult novels.
Yeah, he introduces himself saying, I'm John Green, resident of Indianapolis and author of The Fault in Our Stars, Turtles All the Way Down, and other novels for teenagers. And then, like, the very next paragraph, he says, I know some of you are very business focused, so here's some business. I've sold more than 40 million books as a resident of Central Indiana, which has been good news for the tax revenue of the state. The Fault in Our Stars is the best-selling book ever to be set in Indiana, and has driven considerable tourism to our shared community. And so he goes on and on and on. And he says, I am your neighbor, and I am absolutely horrified by the decision of some members of your board to override a huge body of expertise and deem hundreds of books, including mine, inappropriate to be shelved as young adult literature. One of the novels you pulled off the shelves won the Michael L. Prince Award as Best Young Adult Novel, mm-hmm. according to leading librarians in the U.S. Another was awarded the Corinne Book Prize, the highest award for young adult literature in Germany. More to the point, librarians and teachers in our community are the highly trained experts that we pay with public money agree that these books should be shelved in young adult literature. But the penultimate paragraph of this mm-hmm. letter, as a business owner, I'm infuriated by your third-rate vice signaling that complicates efforts to bring businesses and talent here. As a parent, I'm disgusted by your disregard for the professionalism and expertise of teachers and librarians. As a Hoosier author, I am deeply offended by your inaccurate and hurtful portrayal of my work. And as a citizen, I am so disappointed that you would choose to use public time and public resources to engage in work that actively harms the public through censorship, de facto and otherwise.
Booyah. Yeah.
The books were put back on the shelf.
Yeah. Didn't you say his books were taken off the shelf and a poster?
Oh, a poster of him is still hanging in the teen section, in the young adult section. John Green saying read, but none of my books are here,
not
apparently.
Mine. No, I just, it's a controversy that is likely to continue because people on both sides feel very, very passionately. Yeah. About this issue, what I really hope that things like John Green's letter and things like that librarian, the memoir, Amanda Jones's memoir, do is just add a little bit of context to this, because that is what this controversy needs so much is context. And, you know, what are we really talking about here? And what do kids need to have access to? And a lot of that, you know, when you get into so many of the books being challenged are books featuring LGBTQ characters, books by people of color, talking about systemic racism, things like that. And there's an argument that books in libraries need to have books that are mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors. You need to be able to see yourself. You need to be able to see others. You need to be able to sort of empathically experience life from a different point of view. And I don't know. This is obviously a controversy that's pretty hot now. It's going to continue at least through this election season, right? but I think that this book is so well-timed to really show this from a very personal point of view by someone who was affected both personally and professionally. And you talked to her, right, mm-hmm. for Marginalia, mm-hmm. and I have my review of that book online as well. So, well, that sounds like a great place to stop.
Okay. Should we talk to our bookseller?
I cannot wait to talk to Holland about September Reads. Hello, Holland. How are you today?
Hey, Holland. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Why don't you start by telling us about your bookstore?
We opened the Novel Neighbor 10 years ago. We're just going to be rolling into our 10-year celebration. We're like, do we call it birthday or anniversary? But we're going to celebrate in October. And the tagline is where books, art, and people meet. And so we've been around and have always carried new books for adults and kids, locally made art that you might not find kind of outside pop-ups and craft fairs, and then always wanted to have a community meeting space, whether for book clubs or we've done kids' birthday parties that are book themed, and people rent out the space. And most recently, one of our two event spaces we've turned into Open Door Romance, because romance is happening all the time right now.
And you are located in Webster Groves, is that right?
Yes, we are right outside of St. Louis, about 15 minutes from downtown.
Okay. And what's at the top of your list? What books are you excited about for September?
It's funny, when I was putting the list together, there's so many of them that come out next Tuesday on September 3rd. And then I've snuck one in. It's a little later, and even an October one that I'll start with, if that's okay. I'm very excited about Like Mother, Like Mother by Susan Riegel that comes out October 28th. And I was lucky enough to get an early copy of this book. And it is sort of the family, juicy, multi-generations, but mostly around this patriarch named Lila, who seemingly runs a Washington Post. She's the head of it. And it goes back and forth from her childhood, which was pretty hard, and her siblings, and a mother that's no longer with her, that's sort of an undercurrent theme, and married this wonderful man, had three children, two of them I think they call the starbirds, that are close in age, very similar, and then this outlier, Grace, who's just perpetually been wishing she had a mom that stayed home and baked cookies and took care of her, but yet she had this epic personality of a woman who's out changing the world and unapologetic and just incredible. And so I don't know if to compare it, Claire Lombardo type of a contemporary, it's engaging. I finished it in 2 days and I'm so excited about that coming out.
Very good. So she's a newspaper woman. The character is, yes.
So she's gone and like broken every single glass ceiling and just is, and just, I think within the first four pages, some of the dialogue, I just loved her. I mean, flawed, but just, you just have to respect that she knew what she wanted. And oh, by the way, I also happen to have this family, but it's not her priority and that's okay. Another one, and then this whole battery of ones that are coming out on September 3rd is we've got one called The Fallen Fruit by Chantal Madison, who's actually a St. Louis author. And we've got a subscription program. We have an adult one, a romance one, and then a picture book one. And we're actually using this for our September subscription because we're so excited about it. And it's one of those books that when you open it, it has a family tree. And you just sort of like, okay, I might have to get my pen out, my annotation notes, because this is going to be, I'm going to get into it. And it's got a little of a fantasy to it, kind of if you were looking like Addie LaRue, so mostly contemporary with just a little bit of mythical kind of fantasy. But already the main character is just kind of trying to find out some stories about her family. She's been gifted this farm and she's going to have to travel back in lots of different ways and kind of figure out and meet up with family members. And there's just all these stories around her family that she doesn't know anything about. So she's trying to figure it out, but it's just gorgeous.
Some ears are going to perk up to that Invisible Life of Addie LaRue comp. So
yeah, it's so good. Another one coming out, it's actually a middle grade book because I still love middle grade. They're doing such fun things in middle grade. And it's called The Queen of Ocean Parkway. And it's by Sarvanas Tash, I think I pronounced that. Apologies if I didn't. But the way it's described as, and I'm just halfway through it, but the description is an 11-year-old podcaster turned sleuth teams up with a new kid in the building to find their missing neighbor. And it's just rollicking and fun. And I loved the book. One of my favorite middle grades is When You Reach Me. But it does have some sort of Only Murders in the Building feeling to it. Like, I don't know if it's kind of playing off that a little bit, but that's been a lot of kind of fun in the middle grade section. Another one that is coming out, The Life Impossible by Matt Haig. I got a chance to read this one cover to cover. It's different, but you can tell it's him. It takes place with somebody who's sort of inherited some property. She's not sure why. She goes to find out what happened to her missing friend who left her this property, and a lot of suspension of what is real and what is not. Everybody's bated breath for this one, and he's done, I think, just as good of a job as he did with Midnight Library. A children's book, the picture book that's coming out on September 3rd, I kind of went all over because I tend to read everything. I don't know if you've ever read Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast was the first of this series, and this is the sixth book, but an author named Josh Funk writes it. Brendan Kearney is the one who illustrates it. It is a perfect rhyming book. It's silly. It's fun. It's great for a read aloud. And this one in particular is called Attack of the Scones. And so they all have to do with these Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast that exist in the refrigerator. And there's been dastardly deeds in the freezer and it goes all over. But now it's Attack of the Scones. And it's a story of believing friends and having compassion with spoofing classic sci-fi movies. So there's always sort of some adult humor in there that just makes it just a fun, fun read. And it's the beginning of the series is always the first of when I've got somebody's got a new wee one or if I need to show up for it. And then the last one is coming out September 17th, and that is The Lantern of Lost Memories by Sanaka Hiragi. And this is a book that really reminded me of Before the Coffee Gets Cold that sort of stays on my favorite shelf. And so it's just this great feel good. I have all these feel good books. Oh, and then I remember there's one more that I forgot that I'll talk about. So it's about a magic photo studio that people can visit after they die and they get to visit their most precious moments. And so I'm barely into this one. So I'm excited for this one to come out on the 17th. So it's got this just really heartfelt And speaking of heartfelt, there is a book that came out that I got an early copy of called Good People, Stories from the Best of Humanity by Gabriel Raelick and Lucia Nell. And that also comes out September 3rd. And I had an early copy and it's just feel good stories. It's short, feel good stories about just people being good people. And gosh, do we need that right now? And I shared it with my mom because she likes to give a book for Christmas or for the holidays. And I said, hey, you might want to take a look at this one. It just makes my heart happy. I read it before going to bed. And she was like, I need another copy of that book. And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, oh, my friend's husband is sick. I gave it to them. They said it was the best book. So I need another copy. I was like, Mom, that was an early copy. I was like, it's not coming out now until September. I can't get it for you until then. But this is definitely going to be on my list to give. And anybody who's struggling with anything at any time, it's just really, really well done.
That's great. So it's almost like a collection of essays, little bits that you can read at a time.
Absolutely. Yep. So a little something for everybody, I believe.
Fantastic. We're always getting requests for inspirational books, feel good books. And that sounds great.
Nobody ever asks me for that.
I wonder why.
Maybe because you yourself are so inspirational.
Right.
Yes. They don't need books when they know you.
Thank you so, so much. This was so much fun. And I have now more books on my stack.
It always happens. My TBR just grows and grows and grows. These all sound fantastic, Holland. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. I hope I didn't talk too fast. And we really appreciate you asking about Novel Neighbor and come by and see us anytime you're in St. Louis.
We definitely will.
Well, that seems like a good place to stop.
All right. Until next time.
Keep turning those pages.
Bye, Beth.
Bye, Suzanne.
Bye.
Books and Whatnot is a production of KMUW Wichita. Our team of engineers, producers, editors, and hosts are Mark Statzer, Torin Anderson, Haley Krausen, Jonathan Huber, Luann Stevens, Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Suzanne Perez. You can reach us by email sent to podcasts@kmuw.org, on Twitter @BooksAndWhatnot, and on Instagram books_and_whatnot. Find more conversations and a list of books discussed in this episode at kmuw.org.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.